You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome in to 11 Personnel, presented by Monticello Bank. I'm Nick Roush, joined by Adam Luckett, where tonight we're talking about the transfer portal, which has consumed most of our time, but we've still been able to squeeze in a little bit to discuss what's going to happen at Thursday's NFL draft. And for the occasion, we've got former Kentucky quarterback Drew Phillips joining the show. He's could be going off the board as high as the second round. But before we get to all that, we got to remind you that we are always presented to you by our good friends at Monticello Bank. They've been in business for 128 years because they've been putting the people first. It's where people matter. They put the numbers on your side to make sure you get the most competitive rates possible, whether you're shopping for a CD or a money market or, you know, trying to finance your home or a new car, which it's about time for the Roush house to get a new car. So Monticello Bank, they're there for whatever you need. They got branches all over the Commonwealth. Check them out online at nbc.com or bank wherever you go with the Go NBC mobile app. Monticello Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. I'm excited for tonight's show, Luckett, because it's one of those things where we do have a lot more meat on the bone to discuss as far as like pressing Kentucky football news. But I do enjoy a show when we get to kind of do just fun football nerd stuff that isn't like necessarily taking up our daily lives. But first, I've just got to start by saying I stink. I can smell myself. I was rounding up kids at the T-ball game, the Pirates. We're a hot damn mess, like it. It's quite a... Whew. They wear you out, man. I know it's only trying to like keep kids from like killing each other and hurting each other, but dude, it wears your ass out.
I could imagine chasing my 2-year-old around the crib is exhausting. Oh, hey, heck, he's not even 2 yet. He'll be 2 in July. But I can imagine. It's what is it like herding cats? Probably would that be a good?
Oh yeah, yes, that's exactly it. Well, and the thing is too is you also have some kids who are great, and then others who just want to play in the dirt, right? I broke up like 6 games of tag in the middle of the game. I'm like, guys, you're going to get hit with the baseball. So we're figuring out as we go. If I'm losing my voice, it's because I'm screaming at kids all day. But it's a real pleasure to be with you all tonight because, as I said at the top, it was a pretty quiet start to the transfer portal. But week 2, first 2 days have been a lot of news. Been a lot of news for better and worse.
Yeah, I think it feels like that's kind of everyone. It's not necessarily just Kentucky. I think everyone's kind of, I don't know if feeling it out's the right word, but I think there's more of a delicate hand you have to deal with some of these roster decisions because Kentucky's not the only one. A lot of teams they got to get rid of players to add players. So I think there's a process there. And then a lot of teams hadn't wrapped up spring until last weekend. And then Nebraska still has a spring game this Saturday, and a couple other teams do as well. So you have that aspect too. And I think it's important to remember that the portal closes on April 30th, but that's not the deadline for guys to make decisions. Like they can string this out into June. And so you have some time there to kind of figure it out, but definitely a slow start. Again, Kentucky, they've got targets out there that we don't probably know about yet. That's for a reason, trying to find out more about them, but we do know about a handful right now. And it sounds like they're about to add one, maybe as soon as tomorrow. Heck, it could be as soon as tonight, maybe as soon as tomorrow. I would think that's going to happen here fairly soon.
Brady had a great question on the YouTube chat. That's where you can join us if you're listening to us. He needs to know how many coffees that you had the day the portal opened. Have we upped our intake with the addition of the new one?
Not really. I was at a certain, I met 3 cups a day. So that's like, you really have to get after it. If I need more than 3 cups of coffee a day, I'm running on zero sleep. So I'm getting some more sleep. So I wouldn't say it was more outrageous than usual. Yeah. And Nick, we've been doing that. It's not just like we just got busy all out of nowhere. It's been a busy off season, and it's really kicked into gear here on the basketball side, and then with the message board and all the good stuff that comes with that. But I think a lot of people have joined us over there, so we appreciate that. Yeah. And I don't think people have been disappointed, because there's been a lot of, this was a good time to join. If you did join in time for the search, for the basketball search, because they've, you got the double dip portal action going on right now, which is pretty crazy. It'd be like if you wrote for the big city newspaper, Nick, and your newspaper covered an NBA and NFL team, and they both have free agency at the same time. That's essentially is what's happening right now.
I like that analogy. I have to try to think of certain things in free agency, because we talk about offers being thrown around. It'd be great if you knew, but they're just playing poker like they do in NBA and NFL free agency too. You think other teams are letting their competitors know what offers they're giving to players, right? The player can lie to, they can be sharing different numbers at different organizations. That happens all the time here. It does feel like it happens a little bit. Like part of it is we haven't adjusted to it mentally, but the guy we're going to spend a lot of time talking about tonight has had a kind of a crazy career. And so we'll go right into it. We'll get into the departures later, but the guy that everybody's been talking about on Tuesday is one Penny Boone, who's attended Detroit Martin Luther King. That's a powerhouse program up there, right up there with Cass Tech. DeAndre Buford went to MLK. He initially commits to play at Maryland out of high school. And after he redshirted one of those years, but ends up going down to the MAC at Toledo and really had his breakthrough year last year. Top 10 in the nation in rushing with 1,400 yards. Third in yards per carry at 7.22, 15 touchdowns, was outstanding. This is the part where it gets tricky, because Kentucky, and this is the, I don't remember the timeline here, if he entered after Chip or after they had gotten Chip, but Penny Boone and Kentucky, they had had talks in December. That was Kentucky, Louisville, and a few others, and you kind of thought the Cats were in the mix, but then Louisville ends up taking the lead. He commits to Louisville, but then is only there for spring. And then before they even end spring practice, he announces he's out. And that's the part that has really pissed off Louisville fans. They were very angry as soon as he hit the portal. He seemingly did not have, like, he was happy to be on his way. He was ready to get the hell out of there. And then you had a moment where you didn't know if he was like, all right, so what other schools are involved? Oh, wait, he's actually reconsidering a return to Louisville. We find out he's visiting Kentucky's campus on Monday. And then by the time he leaves on Tuesday, the predictions are rolling in for Penny Boone. So look at that. That's the 10,000 foot quick hitter kind of stuff, the bare bones of it. I know you've dug in a lot deeper, but I do think that Penny Boone is the ultimate. Like, he's the hard, difficult, casual college football fan is having a tough time coming to grips with the Penny Boone bouncing around 4 schools in 4 years. You know, like that. It's just very difficult for college football fans to wrap their minds around a dude transferring 3 times, and when he goes to the 4th school, he's only at the 3rd for 3 months. Like, it's just a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, I think it more has nationally. I don't know if it's that big of a deal. I think people just like, if this was a guy going from Miami to UCF, we probably wouldn't think much of it. I just think locally it's a big deal because of the direct correlate or the direct line he's taking from Louisville to Kentucky. I think you go and, back.
to add to that too, Louisville is just a transfer portal program, so it's just everything's amplified and magnified.
And like, what's going on with Louisville right now? Like, all these players are leaving that were recruited to be starters. I mean, let's call it like it is. And they're leaving. Now, the spin locally is that they are, these guys are second string or didn't practice in the spring. Like, Tyler Barron didn't practice at all in spring. So he didn't get a spot, so he's leaving. But then there's also the point, well, this is 2024, guys. Like, the money's a big factor. You all have a lot of money tied up over there. Just hired a basketball coach, and they're bragging about the NIL war chest of basketball. So, like, do they, like, what is their money situation? I think that's a fair thing to worry about. Let's call it what it is. They brought Penny Boone in to be their number one running back. Now, they can spin it however they want, but that was the goal. Now, what happened in practice could have changed that, but you brought him in to be your number one guy. So something happened there. And so you're seeing, like, Nick, we're getting practice clips leaked, right? Like, look, he's running with the twos or the threes, and it's like, what's going on? We get a Penny Boone doing the Eli Drinkwitz stand on business situation.
Yeah.
So you don't know really who to believe. And I think Boone, you look at him as a player here. You know, you're at least I'm always hesitant on like the kind of 1 year wonder guys. Like the guys out of nowhere have the big season. That's kind of what Boone had last year.
Yeah.
So you have to look at it like that. Okay. That's probably him at his best. We're probably not going to get him at his worst. So where is he at in the medium? But this is a guy, I think he fits what Kentucky wants to do. He's a big, big tailback. He's played between 230 and 260 pounds his entire career. For a big back, he plays with good pad level, good bend, has some elusiveness in the open field. So I think he would be a really good fit. And I think what we've heard Kentucky talk about all offseason, from Mark Stoops to Bush Hamden, and then the type of coordinator and offenses Bush Hamden has had, and then with the return of Eric Wolford, I mean, everything has been about running the football and running the football with more efficiency. And that's what this guy did last year. He had a 51% success rate on a high volume of carries. Only seven, I believe, running backs in college football had more rushing yards than him, and he played in 13 games. So from that aspect, and you add in Chip Traynham with that, who had good efficiency numbers at Ohio State, to me, like that's the goal. Like, we're running the damn football this year, and we're getting two guys who have high floors in here who can run the ball and who are 230 plus pound tailbacks. And they're both going to get touches, and we're going to play a little faster. And that's what that move kind of is to me. I think Davian Martinez was a big swing, but I think Boone was the obvious kind of direct pivot for them. Detroit guy, they've had a lot of success with Detroit. They have good relationships with Detroit. Kids from Detroit have thrived at Kentucky. Yeah,
there's no doubt about
that. So I think that aligns. And then I think the big elephant in the room is, right, the leadership on offense. We've got bad leadership on offense.
Yeah.
Liam Cohen said it. Vince Merrill said it. So what went into that? Was it the culture of having a passing offense in a running program? Was that just a problem? Do they need to get rid of that culture and just be like, we're downhill, kick your ass, we're going to run the football culture? Was it coaches? Did the coaches, was it the quarterback? Was it, who was it? Like, what caused that? It's hard to even handicap that on the outside. I mean, it's just impossible to. And so you have to trust them with this guy. It's a little weird. I will say that he goes somewhere for 3 months and bounces.
Especially just chirping afterwards. Yeah.
Especially an offense that had two tailbacks that are going to get drafted this weekend. So
yeah, the second string guy is going to get drafted higher than the guy who's running first string.
So that is a little odd now, but sometimes the simplest answer is the answer. And it's probably just because he didn't get the money he was promised. It would be my guess is what happened over there. And so that's where we're at. And if maybe he didn't love the fit over there either, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
He's got more of a, you know, Detroit guys have thrived here and have done well at Kentucky. And so maybe this will be more of a fit here. And I think schematically he makes some sense from a downhill type runner aspect. And I think there's plenty to be excited about with him. And I think they've been telling us, maybe without telling us, but kind of like giving us breadcrumbs. I think they're getting back to their roots here. They're saying, hey, we tried the passing thing. Like, they're not going to give up passing, but they are going to run the football, and they're going to be a run-first offense, and I think that's what we're going to see play out this next year. What we did, they weren't that the last 2 years.
I love that we've got a Louisville fan in the chat who's just very mad right now. Who's just, whatever they're feeding him, he's just gobbling it up. Dude, the agent said this and blah, blah, blah. Like, dude, everybody's full of crap.
Yeah, I don't blame him from that end, because Jeff Brohm is king right now. So whatever he feeds you, you're going to eat. I mean, you're going to eat it with a smile right now until he loses some football games. So I don't blame him. But I'm just telling you, I'm not buying that. I just not believe in that. That's where I'm sitting. Now, that's one of us is right, one of us is wrong. It'll never be probably be truly proven. But it doesn't make much sense that he would be like the third string tailback to me. That just doesn't add up. Went out and got him, and you picked him to play over the guys you had on your roster. Like, they already had Don Chaney, the Miami transfer, on the roster. They already had the two tailbacks, Maurice Turner and Brown, who was a freshman last year. They were on the roster, so you picked him to play over those guys.
It does feel like, though, that you mentioned two high four guys. I mean, for the most part in their careers, these guys have been second fiddle, right? I believe Kobach was even there for his first year at Toledo, if I'm not mistaken.
The year before, 2019 was Kobach's last year, and then Boone showed up in 2020. Or no, excuse me, 20. I'm getting my years mixed up.
Okay. Yeah.
2021 was Kobach's last year, and then 2022 was Boone's first year there.
They showed up. Okay. Got you. But I'm one of those, because a lot of people have rightfully wondered, do we think this is because they think Chip Traynham stinks? Is that why they need to get another guy? And I know that this hasn't been the line of thinking, and we thought last year was going to be different with Ray Davis. Like, we thought they were going to do the running back committee thing. I wrote too many stories about it. I've ate up whatever they said, but it was, in fact, baloney, right? Like, they did not do it. Maybe Bush Hamden's different. But then, I don't know, like, look it, I go back to, I mean, he's always had a 1,000-yard rusher, so, like, do they really worry about Chip, or is it just the guys behind them? Like, is it just an indictment on, I think the way you said it, like, maybe them saying Jason Patterson emerged is actually a bad thing, that they had to have a freshman running with the ones because the other guys weren't good enough. Or, I don't know. I'm having a hard time, because it's also this thing too where we've got a new offense coordinator and we can't tell when he's lying to us. And he was saying that the running backs were the most consistent group all spring.
We don't know how to read them yet. Yeah,
exactly. So, like, it's I'm having a tough time. But I did just hear that, you know, like on Tuesday morning, that, you know, okay, like we like this guy. We want things to work out. We don't want to ruffle too many feathers. But if all goes according to plan, we're feeling good about him. We just kind of need to keep this quiet now, make it delicate. And then I just thought that was very funny that they were trying to, like, you know, tiptoe around it. And then all of a sudden it's like the agent goes, it's Kentucky or Georgia. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks for that. That was real subtle there. But a great PR move, though. I love it. He's picking the Cats over Georgia.
Yeah. To my answer on the Chip versus is Chip good enough? Whatever you think about Chip Traynham, it's fine. But he's played at Arizona State and Ohio State and has been a quality, like, at least number two back in those offenses. So his floor to me is going to be a quality number two at Kentucky. Like, I'm not really, he's going to be a good player or solid contributing player for Kentucky. The ceiling is a question mark. So maybe they figured out that the ceiling maybe is super high, but he's still a guy who can play. And I think he's going to play here and have a good season. But Nick, last year was an anomaly because RB2 on Kentucky's roster had 28 carries.
It's crazy.
That's not going to happen this year. They're going to need more carries, and they're not going to be a pass-happy offense. They are going to run the football first. I think when we look up run play percentage at the end of the year, I think Kentucky's going to be near the top of the SEC. So if you're going to do that, you need another 100 carry. You need 200 carry players to me. Like, that's, and I don't think Vandergriff's going to be toting that rock 100 times. So, like, to me, that's what this is all about. I don't think you're going to have a back that's like getting 230, 240 carries like we saw Benny Snell get. He got 262 in 2017. He got 289 in 2018. That's not happening. But what I can see is you're going to get another 80 to 120 carry back this year. And that's really why they needed another back. Again, that's what I wonder. If the Patterson development was actually a bad thing. Was that actually like, we don't have anyone there? And then if you hear them talk and you kind of like evaluate players from that prism, the backs they're talking about are not Demi Sumo-Carnbase. They're not even Jamarian Wilcoxes. They want big hombres that can go down the middle and break tackles and turn 1 yard gains into 4 yard gains, right? They want to play ahead of the chains. They want big dudes who can run the football. Even Jay Boulware has talked about he prefers bigger tailbacks.
Yeah.
Well, so that's where I think there are. They just wanted another big tailback with Trainum. And then maybe they thought Trainum, you know, I think you can make the argument that they were worried about his ceiling. But I think more so it's we're going to just have more snaps this year. We're going to need another back to play how we want to play.
My thing too, the other part of it that people might be concerned about, like, is it going to be a locker room problem? Blah, 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 blah. I mean, I don't think there's ever been significant locker room issues that didn't blow up into a big thing really up until last year. And even then there wasn't some sort of huge issue, right? It was more of a just like, we just got kind of a bad blend here, you know, like it was just,
well, things weren't going great on offense. And then defensively, lack of depth caught up to them fast at a couple positions. And I think that was kind of, and then a couple guys that they were banking on to have big years didn't have big years. And that was kind of most of the problems. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Typically,
right, like
their culture's, I think overall their culture's in a good spot.
Right. Like they, it's the Stoops subscribes to the 90-10 rule from Tressel where, or I forget the exact ratio, but it's 5%. Of your team is the best of the best. They're Boy Scouts. The other 5% is poop heads. And the other 90%, they're bought into your culture. You can do that if you have a couple poop heads here and there, right? Like Vito Tisdale lasted Kentucky for 3 years, you know, like you can do that if you have the right culture in the locker room. So I'm not worried about Penny Boone having too big of a head just because he went on Twitter and said he was staying on business and he transferred a lot. They got a lot of transfer players. And this year's guy, transfer players are strong culture guys in Vandegrift and Jamin Dumas Johnson. So I'm not worried about it from that perspective. I do think what's also speaks further to your point about moving to a more run heavy offense is just look at all the departures at wide receiver. I mean, it felt like there was an arms race to get receivers, and three of the seven who have departed so far this spring are receivers, including Shamar Porter and Ray Cottrell, two big outside guys that weren't really in the top six. So it's like, well, we'll see you later, right? Like it's thanks, but no thanks. And Ardell Banks, he's another guy, 6'3", outside receiver. So it doesn't seem like there was like a year or two, it's like, we need more receivers, we need more receivers, we need more receivers. Now it's like, you know, I think we're all right. I think we got some good ones here. Now they're going to have to, a lot of those guys are leaving after next year, right? At least three of them. So you're going to have bring in more. But I think that part speaks to this as well, like it. Just the overall roster construction.
Yeah, I think wide receiver, 8 scholarship players right now. That's a dangerous number to me. Like, it's just like, what happens if you just even have one injury? What does that make your top 6 or top 5 look like? So that's an interesting number. And then you've got, like, David Washington's going to be a true freshman. I don't know if he's going to be a factor at all. So where are you at there? I mean, that's kind of a tricky number to me. But we saw high turnover there that I wasn't really surprised by. But yeah, I mean, just on offense and defense, you talk about roster construction, Nick. They've got 42 scholarship players on defense right now and 36 on offense per my count. Like, the offense is just a little bit behind. Now, some of that is because quarterback only has 2 scholarship players, and that's Bo Allen's not on scholarship, at least not yet, so he doesn't account against that number. But they just, they're kind of thin in some spots on offense. Tackle is obviously one that we all know about. And then receiver all of a sudden is gotten real thin. And then even running back's a little thin because Tavani Mizell's coming off a major knee injury. So I don't even know if he's going to be a guy who could factor this year. So that would get you down to four scholarship tailbacks. And so the roster construction is unique. And I think everyone's eyeing, like, I think the two big positions we were all eyeing going into this portal window, at least for me, mm-hmm. were cornerback, outside cornerback, and, you know, an interior defensive tackle that can maybe play nose for you, like a true defensive tackle. And they are targeting, I think, those guys and looking at those positions. But there are some, I think, depth needs a little bit on offense when you just kind of look at how they're spending their scholarship capital.
Yeah, and to get to some of the potential targets too, a lot of it is they're keeping things quiet, but at the same time, there have been some swings and misses, right? Like Greedy Vance, I thought it was odd because he was a nickel, and that's where they've got Jansen Dunn to play that spot. But they need guys in that secondary, I feel. And we just haven't heard a lot of names in that front. And interior defensive line, you know, Rene Congo's played some of that. He visited on Monday. And we haven't really heard much more else. Brandon Lane was mentioned, but it's my understanding he's not going to be visiting this week. So it's kind of I think part of your point, too, is like what we thought they were going to do, they haven't really done. But at least most of the guys that are going out, we really didn't get a surprise until today with Jeremiah England. That was the one where it was like, ah.
Yeah. On the D-tackle front, Nick, there's another Detroit guy, Derek Harmon. I would just watch. He would make some sense for Kentucky if they were going to take a big swing. But then again, transparency. We don't know what exactly the situation is there. Like, we think we know, but we don't know for sure.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm kind of watching what they do here. If they kind of sit pat, then I think they're going to be pretty healthy there. But if they don't, that probably tells us that a couple guys are, yeah. But right now, we just don't know what the actual real situation is there. And then at corner, they've got eight scholarship corners per my count here. That's a lot. You know, you only got 40, you got 42 guys on defense. Eight of them are at cornerback. That, you know, you're spending a lot. That's your currency.
You need some of them to be good.
You're spending a good piece of your pie already on that position. And there's one guy, essentially. You know, I think they like where Dunn is after last year, but they got Maxwell Harrison, and then it's a bunch of, I think, kind of throw your hands up with three true freshmen in that room that were all kind of TBD. And so what do they do there? That's just something to watch for. But, yeah, I mean, I think we'll get our answers, not necessarily from them telling us, just from what their moves are, I think, over this next month.
I'm one of the Grady Judd content. Like, we couldn't get into it because he was hurt all year. Then he finally comes back from injury, and the first time we see him, he gets a pick six. Just, I'm one of Grady Judd. Is it too much to ask? It's also just weird, that whole situation. Right, because it felt like he could have gone somewhere bigger, but he had the bad knee. Kentucky took him, and then as soon as he gets the knee done and is ready to rock and roll, they have him at corner instead of safety. And then he plays well at it. It's like, oh, well, maybe they got something here. Oh, actually, no. I mean, they need good corners, and I know that's playing against, you know, the other threes and fours and the scout team guys, but, I mean, yeah, that's the only – I mean, has there been another significant? I mean, Keaton Wade played a lot, but has there been another big loss that you've been like, wanted that guy around? And it's mostly just because, like, it's back-to-back off seasons where you've had a four-star freshman in the secondary dip without ever really giving it a shot.
It's similar to the Devonshire departure to me.
I think a Kobe Albert, you know? But that maybe it's just the recruiting profile that's similar. But yeah.
Yeah. England is weird because he finally gets cleared to practice. You practiced him. He has this big spring game. And then Stoops comes out and kind of made a concerted effort, at least kind of how I heard it. Maybe I need to listen to him. Was pretty much like, he's not playing this year. Like, essentially, like, Well, he's got a long way to go. Trying to kind of like throw some water on that fire. And like some of these transfers are like, you could almost like, when something happens in a spring game, it's almost bad that it happens. Cause then it's like, there's tape out on there. Like that pick he made was a big boy play. I thought he physical at the catch point, ripped it away from the receiver. And then he made some other competitive, I thought, plays in coverage against some good Kentucky receivers. So that could have been a thing where it's, you know, like a school like UCF, I don't know, school closest home, sees that. Right. It's like, hey, come down here. You got a chance to start. We'll throw you this amount of money. Well, whatever. Like that could have been what happened there. And that kind of smells like what happened. That's why I compared it to Devonshire, because he just went home. It could maybe been something like that.
It's true.
That, I mean, that's what, like, if you're, that would, when that would make sense. Like, oh,
yeah,
that's what happened.
I wouldn't be surprised one bit if we end up seeing him at one of those Florida schools. But we'll get more portaling throughout the next 2 weeks. Prospects, as you said, like it, have until April 30th to enter their name into the transfer portal. I got a hunch that we're going to have some Penny Boone news sooner rather than later. Will it happen before Roger Goodell gets booed on stage? Like it's a tradition unlike any other. It's one of my favorite parts about the draft. It's one of the most fun things to do to be there, is when you're just among a couple hundred thousand people just booing one human. So much fun. So much fun. And this year's draft, I think, big picture, there's a little... like, I think it'll be fun for the casual fan because of so many offensive players that are likely to be taken in the first round. Some people estimate that this could be a record for offensive players in the first round. And depending on what happens with some of the quarterbacks, you know, you could have five or six. So that part is exciting to me, especially when it you have the chance for a couple of trades. You know, I know the Vikings and maybe the Raiders are kind of whispered about it, of wanting to move up. Cardinals might not be so eager to be there. Neither are the Patriots. So it has the potential to be a real fun first round, first night on Thursday night.
I agree with you. I think the big thing is, like, there's a scenario where no defensive players go in the top 10. Like finding where the defensive picks are going to come from is kind of hard here. And then it's a needy quarterback draft. I mean, the draft starts at number two to me. What do the Commanders do? And then who do they pick? And then either Drake May or Jaden Daniels, what happens after that? Dude, the Pats just they're a bad football club right now. They need a lot of they need assets more than anything else. So would they be willing to trade down to get some assets, you know, not be very good this next year, and then go get your quarterback after that? Kind of do like a similar to what kind of the Bears did this year. Would they be willing to do that? That's worth wondering. The Cardinals do not, you know, they're still riding the Kyler Murray train, and they need young talent on the team. So they're not going to mess with a quarterback there. So what happens there? The Chargers don't need a quarterback at five. And you go on down the list, it's just really anything can kind of happen here at the top of the draft. Like, that's why it's hard to even, like, to me, read to usually the top 10 to 15 on the mocks at this point are usually pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. But with this year, you just don't know. Because what do the Vikings do? The Vikings got two first-round picks. They got the ammo to really jump up there if they want to. And they are QB desperate.
We experienced it last year with the Texans. They were the big movers who end up getting the rookies of the year, right? So I think they set some precedent on how quickly you can flip your team if you're active enough in the right circumstances. So having these teams who are comfortable with quarterbacks high up, I think, matters. How much – we saw this movement last year with all the odds and stuff like that with Will Levis a couple of times. How much are you weighing the heavy intel coming in from everybody that it's Jaden Daniels to the Commanders? Like, it's almost like initially, I was like, okay, I see why they're doing it. I probably wouldn't. But, man, it is overwhelming how, like, Daniel Jeremiah, McShay, anybody that you stick a microphone in front of is saying that it's going to be Jaden Daniels to the Commanders. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's hard to get a read on because we've never seen this GM draft. Adam Peters came from the 49ers. And then Cliff Kingsbury is our offensive coordinator. Dan Quinn's the head coach. Like, I'm having a hard time getting a read on that. Because there's not really a track record there.
Yeah, complete new ownership, everything. I mean,
to me, you kind of got to go back to the last quarterback the 49ers drafted when they were in this position.
They went with Trey Lance.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
They went with the traits. They didn't care about the lack of production, this or that. That didn't even turn out to be the wrong decision because that QB draft ended up stinking. So, like, even if they drafted Mac Jones, are they in a, you know, it kind of worked out well for them. But does he, like, who has the more NFL kind of traits? I would say Drake May.
Yeah.
But someone might argue different because of the off-script playmaking that Jaden Daniels has. So, I guess it just depends what they're looking for. So they're a fascinating team because I don't know. I mean, you could tell me either or. I would believe that. But, yeah, if it becomes like this whole thing where there's never been a consensus and then all of a sudden there's a consensus, it's kind of like, oh, hold on now. Is this a smokescreen? Like, what's going on here?
Right. That's the
– it does feel like they crapped on Drake May all process just to take him number two, right? Like, that's been a big part of this draft. This preseason has just been talking about how Drake May is disappointing. But not pointing out the fact that he played – like, his offensive line stunk. He had a coordinator change. He had to play Superman football for most of the season. And if you – like, I just can't envision people – like, if you sat down and watched Carolina games.
Yeah, they were so bad.
Weekly. And if you maybe bet on them, like I did a few times.
We did. I bet on them more than two often. Yeah.
He was not the – like, he made, like, Superman plays more often than not. Like, guys all over him shrugging defensive linemen, making throws down the field. And then you look at it 2 years later, he had two NFL receivers, but they were never on the same team together. He had Tez Walker, who's going to go in the third or fourth round. Then he had Josh Downs, who was really good for the Colts last year as a rookie. So it's not like he's had these super talented weapons around him. Where I think it was different, like, I think the comp is easy to put him with Sam Howell. But Sam Howell had some better weapons around him. He had two NFL receivers, Devontae Robinsons.
Yeah.
Like he had those two tailbacks that ran all over everyone, and the O-line was better.
They had 2,000-yard rushers when Sam Howell blew up.
Devontae Williams, and then the guy that went to the Jets, his name's escaping me.
I forget his name, too. Devontae Williams is the better one, though. He's always the guy I would draft late in fantasy. I just thought he'd always do it. Which, digression, see the Broncos uniforms? What are they doing?
No. They look like arena league.
They look like the Chargers. The Chargers are division, right? They're division rival, and they got like lightning bolts on their shoulders now.
Someone said the Broncos turned into UTSA on Twitter. I thought that was pretty funny because that's what
I saw another one say. Like UTEP?
UTSA. Yeah, I saw that too.
It's crazy. Do you have a favorite prospect? I think this. Well, he might not be your top five pick, but I think he's going to be a stud.
Yeah, this one was kind of easy for me when you brought up this topic. Liatu Latu and Quinyon Mitchell are probably not going to go in the top 10, but they will be two of the top 10 players to come out of this draft. Now, Latu, the injury stuff, if there's something I don't know about the injury, obviously, but he is a freak edge rusher, and like I would be willing to bet Defensive Rookie of the Year honors for him.
He
was an absolute stud at UCLA, unblockable. And then Quinyon Mitchell, he played at Toledo, but he was locked down, just an awesome corner in every regard, from tackling to off coverage to press coverage to making plays on the ball. He was absolutely clamps at the Senior Bowl, tested really well. Like, I think he's going to be an impact starter year one. So those are my two guys. Like, I think both these guys are going to be top 10 players, and they're going outside the top 10 in the draft. And so these would be the two guys I would bet on If you're looking for an under the radar top guy, and if your team's picking in the teens, and even Latu, you see him mocked into the 20s. Like if you're a team in the 20s and you get him, and as long as the injury stuff is good, like he's got all pro potential to me. Like he's an absolute stud, both against the run and the pass.
I think some of my blinders are up because Micah Parsons is so awesome, but I love Chop Robinson. Just is like, oh, you mean another super athletic freak that played at Penn State? Like, okay, sign me up for a guy named Porkchop. Like, it's just, and especially when you, it's not to, I love the dunk on James Franklin as much as anybody, but like, you know, he's going to get out of traditional 4-3 stuff. The way they use those kind of athletes in the NFL, so much different. So I'm all about me some Porkchop Robinson. All about it. He's going to be really talented. And then one that maybe it's me just betting all the Iowa games, but Cooper DeJean, like,
He will impact the football game one way or the other. Right.
Exactly.
Special like teams are in the slot or playing outside. He will be a factor one way or the other.
Yeah. And I don't see him being Darrell Revis Island or whatever. You know, like, he's not one of those guys. But he's going to – it's kind of like when the Ravens drafted the kid from Notre Dame, and you're like, well, yeah, that guy's going to be awesome. And his name escapes me right now. The safety, Kyle Hamilton. You're just like, yeah, he's a Ravens player, and he's going to just wreck shit. And that's what Cooper DeJean's going to do. Like, I don't – it's hard to define the role, but he's going to be awesome in the NFL. I have no doubt about it.
Yeah. The thing with Chop Robinson, and there's kind of been a couple Penn State guys like this, where they test just out the wazoo. But the lack of the production, you're like, where's the production at? Like, Otega Oweh plays for the Ravens is one who was like, didn't have a sack his last year.
Oh, the Clemson guy that got picked over Josh Allen, Cleveland Farrell, was like that.
Yeah, so like that would concern me. But like you just look at him, like if you just see a picture or him moving in pads, like he looks the part. And so he's going to be a guy at the end of the draft that's going to be probably a team's going to be willing to bet on.
What happened to the Texas Tech guy from a year ago? Did he play?
He hurt his foot. It was the same thing going in the draft. He had that hurt foot, and he just didn't play. And that, like to me, I was like, I don't really understand some of the hype with him, but we'll see this year. So, yeah, he's still on the Raiders. He's on the Raiders.
That's such a Raiders pick.
But they're back in the pass rusher market. So it's like, Raiders have had a lot of that here recently.
Tyree Wilson, which I believe there was a guy right behind him that was awesome this year too. But nevertheless, I'm struggling to think of that off the top of my head. Who that guy was real quick. I'm pulling it up. Tyree Wilson. And it was Jalen Carter who was 2 picks later. So I know different positions, but still you want some wrecking balls. I wouldn't have taken Tyree Wilson.
Lucas Van Ness flashed. I wouldn't say he was good as a freshman. And then Will McDonald with the Jets, who I believe had a productive year, but it's kind of lost in the shuffle there, but they just like, there were some other rushers there, but like, again, Tyree Wilson was a trades guy, Nick. Just athletic freak. And he had the production, though, at Texas Tech, but there was the injury concern. And that kind of showed up year one, and we'll see what he can do year two.
Matty G, he said, Porkchop, where does Patty Mayonnaise go this year? Great question. Love some mayo. Who's your bus? Who are you going to be just like, this guy's going to get picked high, and we're going to be dogging him?
That is a good question.
I don't know how he's going to get picked like it, but somebody's going to talk. Like, I really think he's going to be at the end of the first round, and they're going to talk themselves into Michael Penix being good because he was awesome at Washington last year. And I'm just like, dude, this guy's going to suck. Like, Kalen DeBoer is an outstanding play caller. He got set up the right way with – Roma Dunze, I didn't mention him because, like, oh, here's a top 10 receiver. I can't say that he's going to – like, but I love Roma Dunze. The fact that he got to throw to those guys, like, I just think he had so much around him. There's the injury stuff. Like, if he can stay healthy, I think he'll be a decent NFL quarterback. But he just I just see him as just, like, this kind of journeyman that doesn't have the juice to just – because when they needed him to just go out and win him a football game, I know this is being very nitpicky, but I'm going to be nitpicky now. they needed him to make some throws in that national championship game, and he pissed down his leg. Like, that was embarrassing, that game. It was so bad. That's a game where if you have that talent, that starter NFL stuff, you elevate your game, and you go win it, right? And so I'm all the way out on Michael Penix. The injury stuff would be enough to make me be out, but I'm out on him. So no for me, dog.
The thing with Penix is there's a lot of tape there. So if you want to find the holes, you can find them.
Yeah, because he's 28.
He's played a lot of football. The thing I worry about with him, Nick, is he's thin and he's a statue in the pocket in a lot of ways. Like, mm-hmm. Now, we saw he was better in the Texas game, and I didn't really see that from him the rest of the year. But for most part, he was kind of thin and standing in the pocket. And he had an NFL offensive coordinator. He had what is being built now as one of the best offensive head coaches in college football. And he had three NFL receivers, and he had Troy Fatanu and Roger Rosengarten, who both might go first round at tackle. And he had a center that's probably going to start at Alabama.
Yeah.
So, and then he had running back in Dylan Johnson, who's going to be like a fifth or sixth round pick. So you're just like, well, God damn, he had a lot of ammo there. And so where is he as a player? Now, he had great years at Indiana, but they were always tied with DeBoer. So that would worry me a little bit. I worry about the injuries. I worry about the lack of off-script playmaking. And then the pinpoint accuracy that you would need to just be a guard-to-guard quarterback when you're just standing there. He didn't really show that all the time. He throws a beautiful deep ball. His deep ball is the best in the country. But when it comes to like zipping the ball down the middle and intermediate to short, the intermediate accuracy, like I would have questions and concerns. And to me, he's probably going to get drafted top 15. He's not a top 15 draft pick to me.
No.
And so I definitely think that's kind of the easy one I would have said. If you made me pick another one, I think, I'm not as high on as some of these other linemen in this draft. Olufoshanu, tackle at Penn State. He's a true left tackle, and where these other guys aren't really, Fuaga and Latham are probably right tackles. I think he's kind of the skin, the Penn State thing, kind of athlete first. He's played a decent amount of football, and he's been good, but hasn't been great. And if he's top 15 pick, you're expecting lockdown left tackle. I just don't know if he'll be that in the NFL. So I think there's a chance he could be disappointing. Safest bet tackle is Joe Alt. Like Titans. If he's there and you don't draft him, man, what are you doing? Just take him and figure like that's a decade. He's a decade answer for a franchise right there. Just plug him in left tackle, you're fine there.
Well, knowing the Titans, they're going to find a way to mess it up. They'll find a way to mess it up.
Yeah, it also feels like a guy Harbaugh will draft, build inside out. Let's just get this guy. Let's get this line ready to go.
All right, like it. Over under. Four Wildcats drafted.
That's the number. I think it would go over before it would go under, so I would play over.
Okay.
Then you would get, I think, in the seventh round, mid to late seventh round, you're in the flyer zone on Brendan Bates, Jeremy Flax, and Tate
Devin Robinson. Leary.
I think Devin Leary would be off the board. So four is Andrew Phillips, Trevin Wallace.
Ray Davis,
and Leary. And then I think mid-seventh.
And then after that, you're Flax and Basico.
You're in mid-seventh to priority free agent zone with the three players, Tate Robinson, Brendan Bates, and Jeremy Flax. And so does one of them get in? Did one of them have a good enough pro day? If you were going to say what, if one of them did, it would be Bates. I think Bates had a great probably day. A big riser.
His injury concerns are out there, though. But, I mean, what tight end has been banged up some? Flax is just a positional, like, did he do enough a la Georgia Safo-Ajay to stand out?
Yeah. And he might be a guy a team drafts because they don't want to spend money on him to sign him as a PFA, right? Yeah. Let's just get him in here. And he's really just a glorified kind of body or a guy there. And then we'll see if he can turn into something after a year on the practice squad.
Tavian Robinson had a really bad pro day, so I don't think he's going to get drafted.
He got hurt at the Shrine Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just not a good pre-draft process for him.
Yeah. Well, it did not go well. But it has gone really well. I appreciate that people are like, even though Ray Davis didn't test well, like, we're still high on him. I've seen that a lot. I saw it from the the Kentley Platt who does the RAS scores.
Math Bomb. Yeah.
Math Bomb.
Relative athletic score.
Yeah. Was like, yeah, this guy's going to be a ball player. He isn't the best athlete. But Trevin Wallace, Andrew Phillips, they did test out the wazoo. Drew Phillips was second overall in the combine in vertical leap. Wallace was outstanding as well, one of the highest percentiles ever in RAS.
Their track background, both of those, Nick, both those guys were stud track athletes in high school. And that showed up in the,
what's
combine and pro day.
What's crazy, too, is that Trevin, he's ranked as high as third among all linebackers. I've seen him as low as six, but it's still like third round. It's just, it's so weird to see the denigration of the linebacker position in the NFL, where they're just like, we'll get him later. You know, it'll be fine. We'll figure it out. Which I feel like him and the Wilson guy are almost like opposites of one another. Whereas Wallace is this great athlete who doesn't have all the production. Wilson from NC State kind of is. And you see a lot of varying degrees. It's just kind of the eye of the beholder on who's going to be rated higher. But the guy we're going to talk to next, Phillips, do you think he's are we hearing him second round? Or going to be third?
Yeah, I think mid to late second round. And then if there's a run on an unexpected position, maybe he gets bumped to early third. But definitely a day two pick that we'll see go on the full board. And I think Trevin Wallace as well is probably going to go off the board in the third round. So I think we're going to get two day three picks for Kentucky on Friday night. And Phillips, man, he's just aced this whole pre-draft process. Like, if you're going to write a book of how to win the pre-draft, he did it all. Like, you know, show up to the Senior Bowl, kick ass, interview well, test well.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. And convince these guys that you love football, and then play. And then, like, he even got the media draft. Guys loving his tape, even without the ball production. Usually that's a big thing. If you don't have the ball production, you know, zero career interceptions. But still did that. And then I think there's a lot of, you know, if he gets in more of a kind of a man reps, when we saw him in man more nickel, he played a lot better. And so what does that look like in the NFL? It's a lot of projecting, I think, with Andrew. But you know he's going to be a special teams contributor day one. And all these teams need slot cornerbacks. You know, it's kind of a premium position now. And he's played it, and he's played it a lot, and he's played it well in the best conference of college football. And so that's where he's at. And then I think it's unfortunate. I think for Kentucky, there's probably a little bit of him playing out of position last year. And maybe he could have focused more inside. He could have had a bigger season. But that's not how it worked out. But, again, like Nick, they keep producing these day two defensive backs. I mean, they've got a handful of them now. Mike Edwards, Lonnie Johnson.
Yeah.
I miss him. Mike Edwards.
Yeah, it would be, I believe, the fifth in 5 years, just overall. I'm probably missing somebody, but I know you got Echols
was a sixth rounder.
Yeah, and Valentine was seventh round.
And they both playing above, I think, their draft selection so far in their careers.
Login starts early in their career. So it's been an impressive run on defensive backs. Spoke with Phillips a few days ago, and it was a little bit chaotic trying to get all that figured out. We were just shooting from the hip. But it was a great interview, and he shed a little light on why he thinks Kentucky's done so well with defensive backs, what makes Chris Collins such a great coach. And he also – we hear more about top 30 visits like it. I had to ask him what the hell it's like. So that was kind of fun.
I'm glad you asked him, because I was wondering, like, is it the same as an OV? What's different? How is it different? So I'm glad you all touched on that, because that's something I was intrigued by as well.
Well, you ask, you shall receive. Here it is, Andrew Phillips. Eleven Personnel is happy to be joined by former Kentucky cornerback Drew Phillips, who's about to hear his name called in the NFL draft. Drew, appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us. Has it said in yet that you're about to get drafted? Has that hit you yet?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. And then Nah, I mean, it's kind of setting in. I kind of started thinking about it last night, really. You know, I said just really this week. Well, it's a week out now, but it kind of started thinking about it, and it's like, shoot, it's in 7 days. Like, I got less than a week now. It's crazy.
So I'm curious, like, this, the season ended in December. I mean, it's been 4 months. So the part of this process, it takes a while. What's been maybe the most challenging part of this grind to kind of get to this moment?
You know, to get to this moment now, it was like those showcases. Like, you got the combine. I was lucky enough to be in the Senior Bowl, but like, you know, those are really good opportunities. But at the same time, it's something you have to go to, and you got to do good, or else it can really drop your whole stock. So it's a lot of pressure on that. But you know, it's just a good competition. It's more about be locked in and consistent and be good on what you're doing.
The thing that I'm like, I don't think these are new, but top 30 visits have now become a bigger deal than what they once were. But I don't really know what a top 30 visit is. Like, what happens there? Is it different, or is it similar to a recruiting trip? What happens at a top 30 visit?
Yeah, think about it as like an official visit in high school. Like, okay. It's literally like the same thing, but now you're going to the NFL and you don't pick them, they pick you. You know, like, you're going to dinner with these organizations, you're hanging out with them, you're going through meeting everybody in the building, meeting with the GMs and head coaches, talking ball, but really trying to figure out who you are, if you're going to be a good fit. So,
okay,
it's really dead like a high school official visit.
Is there a bunch of other people there with you too?
There's different kinds. There's different teams do different types of top 30s. So some teams may have a lot of guys. Some teams it was just me, and some teams would be like me and like two other people.
Okay. So, I mean, that's kind of like high school recruiting, right? Like, sometimes there's big official visit weekends, and then other times, you know, only one or two. Do they give you balloons and big goodie bags?
Is it? No. We don't get that treatment, man. It's they're testing us instead of giving us balloons. They're trying to see what we're going to do.
Has there been a moment that's been weird in the draft process where you're like, all right, so how's this going to, like, how does this apply to football? Because I feel like there's a lot of stuff throughout the draft process where I'll like look around and, you know, I see an offensive lineman running a 40. I'm like,
that's one of those things. It's like, I've always been a big thing. Like, why are O-linemen running 40s and doing stuff like that? I don't know. People, especially at my position, you don't got to be the biggest or tallest, like the biggest, tallest guy. But like, people put so much emphasis on that after it comes to the combine, where like, there's been guys in the Hall of Fame that are small guys, but they're just good at what they do. So I guess, I don't know.
What's your sales pitch when they ask you, why do you think you would be a fit for our team, Drew Phillips? What's your kind of response? Because I'm sure you've got one that's like, this is my good version, right? This is what's going to get me my job.
Yeah. Shoot. Put me on the spot right now. I thought I was out of the time mode. Usually when coaches ask me, like, what am I going to get out of me? I'm like, you're going to get a versatile player that wants to get in there and win a Super Bowl. Like, I don't have personal goals as of right now. It's more, I'm trying to get in there and contribute to go win. But I'm be the most versatile and physical cornerback on that field.
Well, there's a guy who wore the Kentucky uniform that played that position that he's got a couple Super Bowls now. So shout out to Mike Edwards. Granted, he's more of a safety.
He's a safety.
Yeah, but he gets up in that nickel a little bit. He mixes it up some. Playing nickel in the SEC, which you did a little BOFA, right? You got the best of the inside and the outside. It's a little bit different covering some of these guys in the NFL. Is there anybody you've circled as like, okay, I can't wait to cover this guy?
Dude, like, I said this on one of them talk shows one time. I said, like, all the receivers, like, I don't shy from competition. Like, all these top guys in the league, like, once I start locking them down and stuff, like, I want to be able to be, like, an eye-opener. Like, oh, this kid's actually solid. But, like, I also want to go against guys like my friends, like Wandell or Lynn, like those type of guys. Like, I look forward to going out there and competing against guys like we're on the same team at one point. So that should be fun.
That would be kind of a surreal moment. Let's talk about your Kentucky career for a little bit. I'm sure you've been so focused on the NFL, you haven't really had time to reflect on everything that's happened. Yeah. So when I just ask you about your kind of favorite memory, is there one in particular that comes to mind, whether it's a play or a game or any single moment that really stands out above the rest?
Oh, man. I got a couple things that, like, I'll never forget. Like, for example, when we were at the Swamp 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When we're whooping down on Florida, and then their whole stadium starts singing that song, "That Won't Back Down," I think is what mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah,
that was great. I ain't gonna lie, that was like my first. I remember that like so vividly. Like I remember that. Then
that was when they had the video of Stoops walking around, and he just looks like he's ready to fight them all. You know,
you probably see me in the back. I'm just like looking around, like no way. Or whenever we played Tennessee last year or 2 years ago too, when it was on their homecoming at night game.
Yeah, that was
at their spot. That was insane. Like you just walk around the field. It's just like an orange tent. Like it's not even like it doesn't even look like you're playing football. Like it's like you're in a horror movie. It's an orange tent, and you're just like, what the? Like this is crazy. Sold out. Like that was insane.
Did you have a team that you wanted to beat more than others? I know every person has one and they might be different, right?
Yeah.
Like I live in Louisville. I want to beat them, but there's some that matter a little bit more.
I really wanted to beat Georgia, man. Like, going and, like, I wanted to go beat Georgia so bad. Like, growing up and being a Kentucky fan and seeing, like, especially the success Georgia's had, I want to go take them down. Like, I played those games like it was my Super Bowl. Like, those type of big-time games, like, I just want to go out there and win, kind of change the narrative, but I'm sure the boys don't get it done.
You originally from Louisville, mm-hmm. moved to South Carolina for high school. Is Kentucky South Carolina, is that a rivalry?
No, Kentucky's used to being up on them really.
I know it's bugged me because I do not like Shane Beamer. I don't think Mark Stoops does either. I don't think
I don't either, man. It's
But that's another exciting place to play. Is there do you have a greatest Kroger Field memory?
Kroger Field? Oh, man. I mean, the one that everyone's going to say is when we beat Florida at home and they rushed the field. That was insane. Like, I was out there when they rushed. I wasn't playing too much. But, like, just being out there and they actually, like, rush the field. You see it on TV growing, like, you're like, what the heck? This is crazy.
when Trevin returned that kick, too.
Yeah, that was so loud.
I don't think I've ever heard the stadium louder.
Yeah, that was insane. That was so crazy. I'd say that game was just so crazy. Like, just the high atmosphere and everything that came with it. We've had mm-hmm. some really good ones, too. Like, the LSU one was a really good one. We beat LSU at home.
Beat them up, too.
Yeah.
And calling Baton Rouge. That was fun.
Yeah, there's been a lot of different games at home. I mean, the fans made it good, usually.
My question for you, so I'm a little, like, we hear a lot of good things about Chris Collins, who's coaching cornerbacks at Kentucky, who's just got a promotion, and I think he's going on year four next year, year three, something like that. Four. What is it about him that makes him a good coach?
You know, he's different from most because he's real life like a teacher. Like, there's been a lot of coaches. He's a teacher in the classroom, but then when it comes to the field, like, he's that, like, enforcer. Like, he's going to hold people accountable. Like, he can translate that teaching to also being a good coach on the field. Yeah, he kind of, like, helped me develop my game in that classroom just with, like, how knowledgeable he is and how open he is with trying to share what he knows about the games, about offenses, and also about just the position of a defensive back. It's that, and then with the accountability, and you mesh it all together, like it's a really good room to have over there with him.
When it comes to the knowledge stuff, how much of your pregame scouting stuff, like on a week to week basis, how much of it is just here's the scheme that they're going to do, or here's what this player's kind of going to do, right?
It's kind of half and half. I mean, like, okay. I'd probably say more. Yeah, half and half, because we do so much different techniques off of different receivers.
Okay.
Like, there may be one game it looks like we're playing something, the next game is totally different, has a totally different look to it. But like, it could be like the same coverage, but I'd say it's like half and half, because like they play hand in hand. You got to play different ways to different teams, different coverages.
Well, and I would assume it might be a little bit more about scheme too, because you're not in a man, you know, y'all weren't playing a ton of man. So it's like, how much do you need to study the other guys? Nuances. I'm curious about another guy who is kind of, they're kind of grooming him to take your role in Jansen Dunn, who came here last year, was his first year, and slowly started to come on, started to play more and more. What do we need to know about him as a player?
I'm about to call him little bro, but he's older than me, man.
Is he really?
Yeah, man. JD, but JD's so cool, man. Like, I'm so glad. Like, when he came to Kentucky, he's like, it's been night and day. Like, if you go through the whole last year, I mean, he's taking this game serious. Like, he's taking those steps. And, you know, by the time I left, it was like, you can, like, he can go take that spot. I think there's sometimes at the end of the season, I was like, shit. I'm like, they may put him in for me at nickel sometimes, man. Like, this kid's a baller. Like, and I'm like, he has everything I had, but like, also add so much more. Like, he has way better ball skills than I do. Like, he's gonna be a dog. I'm excited to see it. But also, like, he's also that type of competitor too. I can see it in him. It's like, he doesn't want to lose anything. Like, he gets sick, like, almost like how I was whenever I would lose a rep or something. Like, I'm mad. Like, he's the same exact way. I'm excited to see what he's gonna do this year. He got him, Max, JQ, all them boys. Like, they gonna eat up.
Max was a guy too. His dad, he came up to me in the preseason. It was at that fan day, and he's like, "Listen, y'all aren't talking enough about my boy." And I was like, "Well, I got to see it out there." And he's got it.
I've been talking about Max so much recently in these past couple months. Like, a lot of these teams and stuff, everyone knows about Max. I mean, this kid's a dog, and he came out of nowhere too. Like, we all knew he had it, and he just kept doing it in games. He's just been consistent, man.
So last year, Carrington gets picked. Mm-hmm. You're on your way to getting picked. Max is on his way to getting picked. The corners, you got some dudes that are going to the league.
Dude, like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
my big question, and this is one that a lot of people ask me, is about the pass defense last year. Because typically, top five in the league, no questions asked, but there were a few games where things got hairy and then you drop out of the top 10. So what do you think maybe went wrong with the pass defense in some of those games last year where things were slipping a little bit?
Yeah. It was one of those things the season went on. Like, you know, there's a couple of, like, I even say there's some games where I wasn't as consistent, you know, us players, we got, it's a long season sometimes. And there's times where we kind of veered from being kind of who we were, consistent, trying to make plays to, you know, just kind of almost try to be selfish sometimes in a way, that just trying to make plays for the defense instead of just being playing as a team, as offense and defense. It's just being consistent, long seasons, to making sure we staying on top of everything.
Yeah, and there was one, it was a pass, it was down at Georgia, and I want to say it was like the first or second drive, and Beck just layered a ball in, I mean, perfectly. And it's like, I mean, what do you even do?
Yeah, it was one of those things. I've seen that play a lot recently, man. But shout out to Beck and his ability. If you see that ball like on film, like, it's crazy. Like, it's just on the line. But it's just, back to what I was saying, just the guys, we had to be more consistent. It's like little things in that where that didn't even have to happen. But you got some guys in this league that'll dot you up if you slip up. So you got to make sure you're on top of it.
There's no doubt about it. All right, before we wrap, so when I think of Drew Phillips, I go back to young Drew Phillips, right? I remember when I first found out Kentucky was recruiting you, and, you know, we're following first off, there was a camp down at UK, and it was there might have been another receiver there, but it was basically you versus Jordan Watkins.
Yeah,
and it was like, all right, who's gonna win these reps? Who's gonna be the guy that gets the spot? And I think you won those reps, right? Yeah. That was, I was like, all right, Drew Phillips might be a dog. And then the second one was this video right here. And I've watched it 100 times. It's incredible. Let's play it.
Oh man.
I don't know how this is possible. Like, I saw Blake Griffin jump over like the hood of a car. You went over the top.
Yeah, what, man.
Why? How? What happened here?
It literally, like, it was no stretch, nothing. Like, we're after school in the parking lot, and I'm making a bet. Like we're making – there's some guys showing, like, you're talking about dunking and, like, basketball. I was like, I can jump higher than y'all. They're like, no, Drew, you can't. I was like, I can jump over this car right now. And I went out there, no stretch, just ran into it. I really jumped over it, like, 3 times, but they just recorded the last one. Like, it's a thing where it's like, it was so, we thought it was so funny and cool in the moment. Like, when I posted on Twitter, I didn't expect for it to like blow up like it did. I thought other people's done that. Like, I didn't think, I thought other people could do that too. But then I got to school the next day, my high school coach ripped me. My dad was ripping me for it. Like, what are you doing out there? You could have got hurt. Yada, yada, yada. I mean, yeah. So I haven't done it since.
I don't think I'll
jump over no more cars.
That's the ultimate dude's rock moment too. Just like, yeah, I can jump over a car. That's crazy. Oh man. Well, Drew, we're all excited for you. We're going to be cheering for you on the next level. Are there going to be nerves on draft day?
Oh yeah. I'm going to be nervous. But it's going to be in a good way. Like, I think it's finally going to hit me and come draft day, and I'm going to be in there and see where I'm going to go.
Do you got any teams where you think like, well, these few, I think these few really like me. Well,
I don't think I'm going to say anything right now.
But you probably got an idea, right?
Yeah, I got an idea in my head, yeah. I got an idea. There's some teams out there I feel like I'd be a really good fit in. I have a great – I ended up building some great bonds this past month. But, you know, if I go to a couple – I go to these teams, I think I have a good shot.
Well, we'll be cheering for you. I love when I've got Red Zone on a Sunday, and then I just see Brandon Echols with a pick six, and I'm like, wait, what? Did that just happen? He just picked off Tom Brady? And then it's like, oh, Mike Edwards. So we're all cheering for you. We can't wait to see you making big plays on Sundays, and enjoy watching you during your time at Kentucky. And I know you'll be rooting on the Cats from afar.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure, yeah. Had a blast, man. Thank you, guys. Thank y'all for everything, man.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.